This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And as I'm saying right now, I am back. You can probably still hear it in my voice some that I am definitely congested and not sounding as well as I have at times in the past. Or hell, maybe I sound better now than I have at some times in the past. But I am back to the yak.com/Austin for your next installment of the Drop and Dimes podcast. Episode 27, I'm Dustin McConus from orangebloods.com, and I had to take a brief hiatus from podcasting last week because by about late Monday, I was feeling like absolute shit, to be completely honest. I had no energy. It's rare for me when I wake up and I don't have a voice. Like, I couldn't even really talk that much on Tuesday, and I really didn't regain a lot of my voice or a lot of feeling normal again until Friday. So it was a long week. It was, I guess it helped that it went by quickly because there were basketball games. There was the town hall with Chris Del Conte, Texas Athletics Director, which if you haven't read our reporting from that at orangebloods.com, in the war room and on the Inside the 40 Acres Forum, get to that. But I left you off in episode 26 basically saying that here we are again. You know, the Longhorns need a big February to play their way into the NCAA tournament because they were 12-10. They had a big week ahead of them, a manageable week from the standpoint of games that they were going to be favored in. I mean, they were a home favorite against Baylor, even though Baylor had won six straight games heading into that contest, and were going to be a road favorite at West Virginia. And I haven't talked to y'all since the Baylor game, and obviously since the West Virginia game that happened Saturday, but man, what a difference a week makes. That's often the case in college basketball, especially in the Big 12, where it's just such a grind. You know, no matter who you're playing, when you're playing them, or where you're playing them, it's a brutal grind of a schedule. And one week can really change the complexity, or at least the immediate outlook for a basketball team. And the Longhorns are now 14-10. They are 6-5 in the Big 12. They're above 500. And they're coming off of not just two wins, two double-digit wins. Two games in which they thoroughly outplayed the opponent. They played a really complete brand of basketball. They were good on both ends of the floor. And they handled their business in a way that really relieved all doubt by the time you got late into the second half. First off, they beat Baylor by 12 points at home. Strong performance there. Matt Coleman was really, really good. And, you know, this is one of the things that I've been saying since the beginning. I remember writing this story before the season began, just that the Texas was going to go as far as its guards took it. And most specifically, Matt Coleman and Kerwin Roach. Those guys were going to drive this bus. And against Baylor, Coleman had 18 points, Roach had 21 points, and then Courtney Ramey, who's turned into this the little, you know, it's a trio of guards now instead of a duo. I mean, he's really establishing himself as a key piece to this puzzle. He had 10 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals in that game. And we'll get to Ramey much more later on as it relates to the West Virginia game, but more specifically right now with him as it relates to Baylor. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Baylor comes down, gets a bucket, first play of the game. Texas comes right back down. Coleman hits a corner three. And Baylor, you know, inbounding the ball, trying to get the ball in. Well, they're trying to get the ball to senior point guard Mekhi Mason, who was coming off of a 40-point performance against TCU, where he was playing with so much confidence. He hit a three-pointer at one point at home and turned to the TCU bench and told Jamie Dixon to call a timeout. I mean, that's how much he was feeling it. That's how much Baylor was feeling it coming into this game. And I thought it was so interesting that it wasn't Roach that was defending Mason right away. It wasn't Coleman that was defending Mason right away, who Shaka Smart said earlier this year at one point was his best perimeter defender because Kerwin Roach had just been too inconsistent on defense, especially – relative to what he's capable of doing on that end. So it wasn't Coleman or Roach that was defending Mason and denying him the ball and not letting him get the ball in, and not letting Baylor get the ball into him. It was Ramey. It was the freshman. And I, you know, you guys have heard me so often talk about Ramey, and just he has this fearlessness. He's always confident. He's always aggressive. He's never going to go onto the floor with fear. That's just not who he is. He's not wired that way. He's, I would say, of more so than anybody on the Texas roster, he despises losing in a way that radiates to the rest of his teammates. There are a lot. I mean, Texas players hate losing. You know, I think that at times you've got a fair to question that with some guys, especially going back to that Georgia game recently. But then these guys want to win basketball games. But some guys have a personality to where it just you understand how much that guy has a burning desire to win and to just despises losing. And that's Courtney Ramey. He's vocal. He's demonstrative. He gets on guys. He's very encouraging. But he attacks the game. He really goes after the game. And yeah, there have been plenty of moments this year, and there are going to be more moments when Courtney Ramey has a stretch where he fires the ball into the stands or forces a pass here or there, maybe forces a shot or whatever. But every mistake that he makes is either going to come from just inexperience or trying to make a play. He's not going to hesitate. There's just that's just not who he is, and we're starting to see him really grow. We saw the first big signs of that against Baylor, just in the way that he really helped set the tone of that game by the way he was defending Mason. And then Roach kind of played off of that. And then Coleman played off of Roach. And all those guards played off of each other. And what you had at the end was, you know, combined 49 points for those guys and only a combined 4 turnovers over a lot of minutes. That's that kind of guard play. If Texas gets that, it's going to win a lot of basketball games. And it was no surprise at all that Texas basically, you know, dominated that game for the most part. I mean, you look at the KenPom win expectancy graph, which I always love doing. It kind of tells you the story of the game. And there was never a point from about the 15-minute mark in the first half, Texas's win expectancy was always above 75%. I mean, it controlled that basketball game. And it was a game that I believe Texas was favored by, I'm going to say it was like 4 points or something like that. So they totally controlled that game. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, we've seen Texas play well at home. And what's going to happen when it goes on the road, knowing that it's playing the worst team in the Big 12, West Virginia. West Virginia has really, really struggled this year. It's one of those years they had a lot of turnover at the guard spot. They really lost the main guys that drove the culture of their program. They've had some injuries. It's just been one of those years for Bob Huggins. And I wondered, how is this group going to handle, you know, because it's one thing to play well at home. Texas beat Kansas at home by 10 points. I mean, Texas, you know, had a gut check moment against Oklahoma at home and won that game. You know, they didn't, even though they didn't beat Texas Tech at home, they still played a good brand of basketball. They just weren't the better team down at the end of that day. I mean, this Texas Tech made a couple more plays. You tip your hat, they were better. But generally, Texas has been good at home since the Radford and VCU debacles. Played a great game in Providence. Kerwin Roach didn't play. That was kind of a stinker, but I guess I'll put an asterisk beside that because whenever you don't have your senior guard, that's a little tough. But beat Purdue at home, kicked the ever-living crap out of Grand Canyon, who's turned into a top 100 team. So they've generally played okay at home. They rise to the occasion at home, as most teams do, especially in the Big 12. There's a reason why it's hard to win anywhere in the Big 12 on the road. So I wondered, are they going to see the West Virginia record? Are they going to see, you know, Kanate and Bolden on the bench not suited out? Are they going to think, okay, we can just show up and win this game? Because that's what they did against Oklahoma State earlier this year, and it bit them big time. Big time. When they came out totally flat in that first half and dug themselves a hole that they couldn't get out of. And you know, we got our answer in the post game after the Baylor game when Texas players were asked, hey, how do you guys replicate this performance? Not uncommon from what they're basically asked after any win. Like, how do you carry this over? You know, it's, you know, we all wonder it, especially with this Texas team. I guess you got to ask it. How do you guys carry this over? And both Coleman and Roach on different occasions pointed out that we went up there last year and lost by, you know, 30 plus points on national TV. It was, you know, they didn't directly say it, but the way they said their response and their actions said it, they were embarrassed by that. And they should have been embarrassed. I mean, it was a complete ass kicking. I mean, they got run off the freaking floor by Javon Carter and those guys. So when I heard that, I was thinking, okay, they've got that carrot out in front of them. Like, this group is not going to lack motivation. And sure enough, they almost left West Virginia with a 30-point road victory and kind of returned the favor to the Mountaineers. Again, you're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangewoods.com. Episode 27, just going through everything that happened with Texas basketball this week. Following my brief hiatus as I recovered both in health and voice, had to take a brief break from podcasting. Yeah, it was that bad. It was that bad when, you know, I couldn't talk. So not only did Texas go up there and handle their business against West Virginia, they left with a 75-53 victory, a 22-point win. At one point, with about 5 or 6 minutes left in the second half, Texas was up 29 points. And remember, this is a team that at halftime in that game was only up 6 points. In the first half, like, West Virginia's bad, but they're still going to play hard, at least for a half. You know, I remember watching them at Texas Tech on the road about a week ago, and they got blown out in that game, but they played really hard for the first half. I mean, that was a basketball game for the first 10, 12, maybe even 15 minutes. And that wasn't dissimilar from what happened to Texas up there. There were a lot of fouls. The game is very choppy. It was muddy. It was the type of game that West Virginia wants. Very, very physical. You know, they were trying to get on the glass. They were getting to the free throw line. Jackson Hayes picked up his second foul like a minute and a half into the game. Kerwin Roach, after he hit his second three to put Texas up 10-2, picked up his second foul of the game on just a kind of a bullshit call on trying to front a big near the free throw line. They were calling every ticky-tacky little thing, because I think sometimes these refs in their minds, they referee certain games and, oh, you know, this team has a reputation for fouling a lot. So they start just calling a lot of fouls. Luckily, it corrected itself some in the second half. But Roach was in foul trouble for pretty much the entire first half. And Jackson Hayes, I think, only played 2 minutes in the first half. So West Virginia, you know, even though Texas outplayed them in the first half, they were able to cut it to one. And I thought Shaka Smart made great use of a timeout in the final couple minutes of the first half when West Virginia cut it to one. And Texas came out and finished the half on a little 5-0 run and built up a 6-point lead before halftime, which I thought was critical, because Texas knew it outplayed West Virginia. It knew it was the better team. It knew it should have been winning by more than 1 point. Sometimes that's just basketball, though. You know, they had the refs going on and this and that. There's no flow to the game. It would have been really easy for Texas to kind of get down on itself some, especially if it went into halftime only up by one or perhaps trailing. So I thought it was really critical that Texas finished the first half that the way that they did. And they came out in the second half and turned the game into a dunk fest. I mean, the first set of the second half, Texas in the half court runs a nice set where you got Jackson Hayes handling the ball kind of in the extended wing area, and it's a little kind of a different style of a two-man game with Kerwin Roach in that same corner. Only those two guys are on the floor. The floor is spaced, so only those two guys are operating in that area, and Roach runs a back cut. Hayes bounces him a pass, and Roach rises up and slams a dunk home in the help side defender's face. And you're thinking, okay, you know, and then West Virginia tries to come back, and then it just, everything Texas did on offense worked. Everything it wanted to do, it did. Pick and roll. It either the guard got into the paint, or he threw a lob to a big guy, or he tossed it out to the perimeter for open shot. You know, Courtney Ramey was hitting pull-up threes, driving to the rim. Texas was getting out in transition. in really running aggressively and getting to the rim. But it was just lob after lob and dunk after dunk. It didn't matter if West Virginia was playing man-to-man. It didn't matter if West Virginia was playing zone. Texas threw it over the top of the zone. Kerwin Roach at one point just kept getting downhill and getting to the paint and finishing at the rim. Ramey scored he tied his career high with points with 19 points. He had 11 points in the first half. It really helped Texas stay afloat in that half as Roach had to sit on the bench for the most time and provided Texas a lot of scoring punch. But he provided the punch of the game when Kerwin Roach threw him an alley-oop in transition, and he rose up, and it's one of those ones where he cocked his hand back a little bit and kind of just snagged that ball out of the air with one hand, his right hand, and in one quick action just slammed that thing tomahawk style through the rim and through the net. And then it's just like, whoa, like many people don't realize that he's as athletic as he is. He's listed at 6'3". I wonder if he might be even a little bit taller than 6'3". But many people don't realize how springy he is. And it's improved a lot since he's gotten to Texas. You can tell that he's getting stronger and really starting to tap into that athleticism even more. But he jumped up there, and it was not an easy ball to grab out of the air. And it was definitely not an easy ball to finish. And he jumped up there and made that play and just slammed that thing through there. And then where he landed, he knew he was right in front of the ESPN2 camera. And he just stared into the camera as if to tell Texas fans, hey, I've arrived. Like, you guys are going to like me. You guys are going to like me a lot over my career at Texas, because he's coming off that Baylor game where he really helped set the tone by the way he was playing defense and just being very physical with Mekhi Mason. And just putting his head down and driving to the rim at times against Baylor. Baylor is a team that wants to try to punk you. They're undersized, but they're very physical. They're very mature. I mean, King McClure is massive. Mark Vidal kind of plays like a Charles Barkley style of big man. He's undersized, but he really goes after the game. And he's more so than anybody on that Baylor team sets the tone for, hey, we're gonna come after you, man. We're gonna make you soft. That's one of the ways we're going to win this game. And Ramey was a big part in saying, oh man, it's not happening. No, you're not going to come in here and push us around. We're going to be the ones that start punking you in this game. And then he follows that with the West Virginia performance where he has 11 of his 19 points in the first half. I mean, he's shooting balls from Pittsburgh at one point, just, you know, pull up, draining threes. And you could just see the confidence oozing out of him. But when he rose up and dunked that alley-oop, I mean, that was quite the message by him. It was quite the message by Texas in that game. And Texas ended up just stealing West Virginia's basketball soul in that game, which you hardly ever see happen to a Bog Huggins team, period, especially at home. You know, there was one point where Texas was winning that game 51-35, and West Virginia called a timeout to try to, you know, I guess stop the flow of the game and try to figure out a way to get back into it. But Texas, I mean, Texas was having none of it. I mean, immediately after that timeout, Roach went back to work. Ramey hit another deep three. And, you know, Jericho Sims caught a lob over the top of the zone from Roach and slammed it down. All that preceded that dunk by Ramey. Which, by the way, Robbie Hummel had a great call on there. He's a really good analyst. I like him a lot. And I love that he said that... He said, welcome to the VIP room, Courtney Ramey. It's time to go upstairs. Like, I thought that was an excellent job by Robbie Hummel. But yeah, I mean, at that point, Texas was up 60-35 with about little under 11 minutes left in that game. And by that point, it was over. It was just a matter of how much was Texas going to win this game by. But just to see Texas attack that situation, as choppy and messy as that first half was, you know, there was a real chance that Texas could have come out, settled for some bad shots early, or just not played as aggressively as it did. And all of a sudden it finds itself in a, you know, ugly slugfest of a game down the stretch, the game that West Virginia won it. But they just came out and you know, okay, we're going to play pick and roll. We're going to hit our bigs if you don't cover them, or we're going to drive to the rim. Okay, you know, we're going to get the ball off of misses in transition. We're going to push it. I mean, Matt Coleman had another one of those transition layups right before the end of the first half where he sprinted up and down the floor as fast as any guard I've seen probably since Mike Kabongo. You know, Isaiah Taylor was really, really fast. Okay, Isaiah Taylor. I mean, Isaiah Taylor could really, really run. But Coleman showed that type of elite speed. I mean, that Kabongo Isaiah Taylor level acceleration in the open floor and just flew down there and had a layup. Like, everything Texas did on offense was what it wants to do. Basically, we're going to play to our strengths and we're going to take advantage of however you're defending. If you're going to play zone, we're going to throw it over the top and use our athleticism, or we're going to move the ball inside out and get a good shot. If you're going to play man, we're going to run pick and roll, spread pick and roll, and we're going to get our bigs involved, or we're going to get downhill. And if it gets to a late clock situation, we're going to try to get a mismatch, and we're going to drive at you. And that's what they did over and over and over again. But I really think just such an underrated aspect about – well, there are two underrated aspects about all of that. How the guards played off of each other, they seemed to just feed off of one another. Like, Coleman would make a play, and then Ramey would make a play, and then Roach was really, really aggressive. And it just sort of – they all unlocked each other's freedom and confidence on the floor just to go out and make plays. And so much of this Texas offense, as I've said numerous times, I mean, its base stuff is a concepts-based offense with a lot of ball screens. I mean, it gives the guards a lot of freedom to just drive the offense. And when the guards are in the mindset that they were against West Virginia and Baylor, it's one of the best offenses in the Big 12. I mean, it's number two in efficiency in the Big 12 right now, and it's actually up to, what is it up to today? Number 34 nationally in adjusted offensive efficiency. So when those guards are in the right frame of mind, it's a good offense. And that's what you saw against Baylor. That's what you saw against West Virginia. But an underrated aspect was just how those guards played off each other. Another underrated aspect, too, was the play of Jericho Sims and Elijah Mitre Long. Two guys that have been – Elijah Mitre Long's really been scuffling. I think Jericho has, over the last week or so, maybe 2 weeks, he seems to gradually be regaining his form a little bit more every game, a little bit more confidence, a little bit more athleticism, a little bit more assertiveness, a little bit more aggressiveness. You can kind of see it gradually building with him. And he ended up playing 19 minutes against West Virginia, 19 productive minutes. He had 8 points, 3 rebounds, a turnover, and a steal. But really, he had 2 dunks, and they weren't easy dunks. So one of them was Elijah Mitre Long came off a pick and roll, just bounced a perfect pocket pass in between two defenders, and Sims caught it in traffic. And before the other help side guys could get there, he dunked in their face. And that's the kind of stuff we haven't seen from Jericho Sims, that in one movement, catch the ball, jump, and just slam it. And don't even think about what's going on. We've seen him too often just hesitate. So he gave Texas 19 good minutes, and Mitre Long ended up playing 18 minutes, which has got to be the most that he's played in a long time. I got to take a look and see. Before that, he played 6 against Baylor, 2 against Iowa State, 3 against Kansas, and 9 against Georgia. So 18 minutes is actually the most he's played since the game at Kansas on January 14th, and he scored 7 points. His efficiency ended up not looking great because he had to force up some threes late in garbage time just because, it was garbage time. I mean, Texas had at one point emptied its bench and had two walk-ons out there as well. So I think that was a really underrated aspect because Texas needs those guys. It can't just be the same 6 guys every night. Who the starters are. By now you know Jace Febres is going to play a lot of minutes. But after that, Texas has really just needed some guys to step up. And Sims and Mitre Long are the next on that list. And I thought it was really important for Texas that they played as well as they did at West Virginia, because there are going to be times when Jackson Hayes is in foul trouble, like he was against West Virginia. There's going to be times when either Ramey, Coleman, or Roach is in foul trouble, like Roach was in the first half against West Virginia. And speaking of Roach being in foul trouble, he finished the game with a plus-minus of +32. Like, think about that for a second. He was in foul trouble for a significant portion of the first half. I think he only played 7 or 8 minutes in the first half. And it wasn't until West Virginia cut the lead and Shaka's hand was forced that he had to put Roach back in there. Texas was +32 when he was on the floor. I mean, that is outstanding. That's got to be one of the better ones, if not the best one, of this season. So this Texas team right now is finding some form. It's finding some form at a very opportune time. And again, you're listening to the Drop and Dives podcast on the yak.com, episode 27. It's recapped what what Texas was doing or what Texas did this past week with a 12-point win over Baylor followed by a 22-point win on the road at West Virginia. And it's amazing how much of a difference a week can make for a basketball team in terms of the way you view it. But Texas now, suddenly it's like, are these guys about to go on a little bit of a run? You know, we've mentioned before, you look at the schedule, it's set up favorably after the Iowa State game. You know, Baylor at home, if you handle your business there, it's a very winnable road game at West Virginia. And then you got one of the rare weeks in the Big 12 where you have back-to-back home games, starting with Kansas State on Tuesday, followed by Oklahoma State on Saturday. And then even after that, play OU on the – you got a week off before you play OU on the road, who's a team that's really struggling right now. Like, this thing is really set up for Texas to go on a little run here and not only remove itself from the NCAA tournament bubble, but perhaps make some real noise in the Big 12. I mean, they're playing the Big 12 leaders on Tuesday in Kansas State, who's at 8-2 in the league. So let's say Texas wins that game. It's at 7-5 in the league. You start to look at its schedule – and it would have a real chance to win 11 games in the league. You know, maybe they steal one somewhere else. But at the same time, I keep telling myself, okay, wait, you know, this is the same team that has at one point lost 5 out of 6 games when it totally fumbled it over itself at Oklahoma State in a game that they really should have won. So, it just sets up so well for Texas. And that's something that, you know, every Monday we meet with Shaka Smart, and it's something that, you know, I hate being the guy. It's like I asked him, you know, whatever. But I did ask him, what's the difference between this team right now and the team that went to Oklahoma State and did what it did in its first half? Because this is a similar type of opportunity for me. You know, back then Texas entered that game 10-4. They had bounced back after the Providence game, but really after the Radford VCU games. They were 2-0 in the league for the first time since 2010 and 11. They had a great opportunity to start the league 3-0, keep that winning streak going, get to 11-4. And they came out in the first half and they were just completely flat against Oklahoma State. Just no effort on defense. And by the time they woke up in the second half, it was too late. So what's changed? Why are these Longhorns different? Why should you, the Texas fan, believe in this team now, you know, even though that it's burned you in the past this year? You know, it's burned you with Radford and VCU after the North Carolina game. It's burned you with Oklahoma State after Purdue and Grand Canyon. It's burned you so many times, and I don't blame you at all for being very cautious with this group. But I just get the feeling the way it's been playing recently, the way Ramey's really infused a lot of confidence into this bunch, the way Dylan Osakowski has become a much more vocal leader. He didn't make a field goal against West Virginia, but he had a game-high 10 rebounds. And I thought that he had a really nice vocal presence on the floor, and he played really tough. He was aggressive. He went after the basketball, and he still made an impact on the game even when he wasn't scoring that much. And he's shown a lot more maturity and consistency with that since Texas lost that game on the road at Kansas. So you've got – Texas has that going for them. It seems like guys are really establishing their roles now. It seems like Matt Coleman understands what kind of energy and poise he needs to play with, and he's been better. So there's all these different signs that should point us to saying, okay, that maybe this team truly is turning the corner. But I think it's all going to come down to whatever happens on the court Tuesday. Because this is a real test for Texas. This is the kind of game in Shaka Smart's tenure at Texas that it really hasn't capitalized on these types of opportunities. You know, I go back to Shaka Smart's first year when they had, I think he maximized that roster. I think they had a good year. They finished 11-7 in the league, even though they lost Cameron Ridley. After that game at Stanford, when they started 8-3, and Cameron Ridley was really their identity. I mean, he was starting to play at a very, very high level, offensively and defensively. So they eventually regrouped after that, and they had that awful performance at TCU and ended up losing by a point. And then they won 7 of their next 8 games, with the only loss being on the road at Kansas. And they were in that game against a really good Kansas team. You know, and they had the game at Oklahoma where they kind of got screwed at the end with the foul call and ended up losing by 3 to Buddy Hield and co. I think that was the year Oklahoma went to the Final Four, lost at Ames. But, you know, then they beat West Virginia at home as a good team, and they had a game at home against Baylor where it's like, okay, you know, you're entering that game 17-9, you're 8-5 in the league. You've got a chance to really finish the season on a really high note and finish well in the Big 12 and help yourself in the NCAA tournament. And they came out and just got their asses kicked by Baylor. Lost by 14 points at home. And it's just like, what is that? You know, why can't you capitalize on that type of opportunity? So we've kind of seen Shaka's teams at Texas do this. You know, they just, when it looks like they're turning the corner, they'll have one of these games where it's just like, really? Like, you knew how much was at stake, and yet you just had a performance where it just wasn't that good. So I think that Tuesday's game, I think, is going to define what kind of season Texas has. And maybe that's slightly unfair to say, because it's totally possible that Texas comes out and plays a B-plus game and Kansas State plays an A-minus game and beats it by 2 points. I mean, Kansas State is good. There's a reason why they're 8-2 in the league. There's a reason why they, once they've gotten Dean Wade back, have been a much different basketball team. They play team defense as well as anybody in the country. They got a lot of experience. You know, Shaka Smart joked that he went back and watched Texas game last year when they lost to Kansas State at home, and he's like, it's all the same dudes. They're all back. And yeah, they are. And experience really matters a ton, especially in the Big 12. So it's totally possible that Texas, similar to that Texas Tech game, plays a good game and just ends up losing by a couple points. You know, that Iowa State game on the road ended up being just a make-or-miss game. Iowa State made shots, Texas didn't. Texas lost. So it might be slightly unfair to say that this game against Kansas State on Tuesday really defined Texas' season, but I really think it will. Because Kansas State's going to enter that game knowing that it lost by 20 points at home against Texas. And yeah, Dean Wade was out, and yeah, Stokes was out. But that program has a lot of pride, you know, especially that group of veterans. So it's going to have plenty of motivation similar to the kind of motivation Texas had when it went up to West Virginia on Saturday. But Texas, on the other hand, knows that this is a Kansas State team that's first place in the Big 12. They're playing a great basketball. It's very similar to how Baylor entered the game last week when Baylor was on the top of the Big 12 standings, was playing as well as anybody in the league, had these veterans, you know, and it definitely had Texas' attention. Every game should have Texas' attention right now, because it needs to understand, if it hasn't understood it yet, that it's capable of beating anybody in this league, but it's also capable of losing to anybody in this league. But you know, it's human nature for guys to, they know when a first-place team comes to the building. They know when Kansas comes to the building. They know when they go on the road to somewhere like Iowa State or something like that, that what kind of level is required of them to have a chance. So they're going to know that Kansas State's entering this game, you know, 8-2 in the Big 12 and playing better than anybody in the league. So I just think that Tuesday is going to tell us so much about how this season is going to end for Texas, and if it truly is turning a corner. Because if they handle their business against Kansas State on Tuesday, they got a home game against Oklahoma State, which, you know, possible letdown situation, but Oklahoma State's just not a good team. And then you get this thing out there for Texas again, the fact that it lost at Oklahoma State earlier this year, knowing damn well that it should have won that basketball game. So it's going to have that lingering too. So if it handles its business against Kansas State, and then you're looking ahead to Oklahoma State, there's a real chance Texas is 16-10 and 8-5 in the league coming out of this week. And then to me, all bets are off, because you'd be talking about a 4-game winning streak. You'd be talking about a week to kind of recharge the battery some without a midweek game before they go on the road to Oklahoma, which will be a winnable road game. All of a sudden, some of these goals that weren't necessarily attainable a few weeks ago become attainable again. And then you've got a group that's playing with a ton of confidence as guys have really fit into their roles. I don't know. I just think that this Kansas State game is such a pivotal moment for this team and for Shaka Smart, because he's been so high on this team, and rightfully so. On paper, it's the best team that he's had at Texas in terms of the roster mix. And if you look at the efficiency numbers, And this will frustrate Texas fans even more because it'll drive the point home that they should be better than a 14-10 team right now. They should probably be a 17-7 team, maybe at worst. They're number 23 in the KenPom rankings. They're number 21 at BartTorvik.com. Those respective numbers, overall rankings, are that if the season ended today, would be the highest any Texas team has ranked since the 2010-11 season when Texas started 23-3 and 13-0 in the Big 12. The Tristan Thompson, Corey Joseph team, they got upset by Arizona in the second round of the NCAA tournament. So there's all these factors that are telling us that this team's better than 14-10. And maybe it's ready to show us that. But I think it's got to show us that on Tuesday. Tuesday is such a big moment. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be probably a defensive-minded game. But it's got to be a game that Texas finds a way to win. Because if they do, it just really sets up this program to reach all of those types of goals that it thought it could when the season began. So as you can tell, I'm pretty excited for this game Tuesday. You don't get many of these types of games or moments in a season, especially in a season that's been so wildly, I don't know if unpredictable is fair, because their inconsistency has kind of been the most predictable thing, which some of you might be saying, well, you know, doesn't that mean they're probably going to lose on Tuesday? You might be right. You might be right. But you just don't often get these types of moments to where it could really send the season in a different trajectory. It could really point the arrow in a way that's been much different since probably going back to that Oklahoma State game on the road earlier this year, you know, and we'll see if Texas has learned its lesson. That's basically what Chaka Smart said today. You know, we'll find out Tuesday if they've learned a lesson, because he brought up with the team this week that Oklahoma State first half. He said it was the most disappointed he's been with this team this year, which is saying a lot because the Georgia game was an absolute disaster from the defensive end. But he was even more disappointed with just the way they played against Oklahoma State in the first half, because he knew what kind of opportunity that was. Who knows what would have happened if they would have began the year 11-4 and 3-0 in the Big 12. You know, who knows how the season would have played out from there. But they can't go back and get that game. But what Texas does have is an opportunity to really change the complexity of this season right now and how it could eventually play out. So we'll find out a lot on Tuesday night. But with that, we'll wrap up episode 27 of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeWeds.com. Thank you for listening. Apologies again for my brief hiatus away from the Droppin' Dimes podcast. I really for a couple of days couldn't even talk. I just had no voice. Man, I felt awful. I mean, I really barely left my house unless it was for work-related things, a game or that town hall or a press conference type deal. I didn't leave my house. I mean, I stayed in the entire weekend, which is rare for me. So thank you again for listening. Thank you again for your patience. The next time we catch up on the Droppin' Dimes podcast will probably be at some point after this Kansas State game. We'll see if Texas has, in fact, turned that corner or if it's back to kind of an up-and-down type of ride for this basketball team as it closes out the season. But, man, what a moment for Texas on Tuesday. What a moment for its NCAA tournament resume, too, because if it wins this game on Tuesday, a lot of things start to look different and they start to get further removed from that bubble. So, thank you again for listening. Get to theyak.com/Austin for all of our great content. A ton of cool podcasts out there that cover an array of things. Football, recruiting, baseball, basketball, hip-hop. I think there's even some politics-type stuff in there. Tech-type stuff. So there's a little bit of everything. Get to theyak.com/Austin. Check out all of our great podcast content. Until next time, thank you for listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Droppin' Dimes podcast. Take care.